this retreat is about prayer, and the Church presents to us Teresa of Avila, Teresa of Jesus, as a doctor of the Church in her teaching about prayer. She shows us the way to intimate communion with God. Prayer is the word we use for our experience of being in communion with God. God is the one who is present to us, indeed to the whole of the universe, holding everything in existence. Everything is an expression of God. We can relate to God in a personal way, and we can relate to God in loving communion. This is essentially what prayer is. Prayer comes naturally to us, though, like everything else, it needs to be nurtured and directed. It can also be stifled. In the process of discovering and developing our unique selves, not all is plain sailing. In some cultures, we're tempted to seek to be independent, to be self-made. In all cultures, the classical vices, pride, covetousness, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, sloth, these classical vices take root. They spoil our maturing process, but they cannot wipe out something which is natural to us: our need and longing for ever more intimate communion with God. When we become aware of our intimate communion with God, by whatever means, we need guidance. The Christian community points us first and foremost to Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said once that his aim was to see people live a full life. I've come that you may live and live to the full. To him, this meant learning to love God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. That's a quote from Mark chapter 12, verse 30. The fruit of this love, and the test that it's genuine, is our learning to love ourselves and others. Jesus was speaking from experience. He knew he was loved by God, and he continued to open himself to welcome God's love and to respond with love. Others came to see that it was this love communion with God that showed in the way he loved others. He wanted to get a fire blazing in people's hearts, a fire that would burn away whatever is an obstacle to love. Being in love communion with God brought Jesus the most exquisite joy, and he wanted us to know this joy. In John chapter 15, verse 11, we read, "I've said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete." In chapter 16, "You've pain now," Jesus said at the Last Supper, "you've pain now, but I will see you again and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from you. In the first letter of Peter, in chapter 1, we read, although you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and rejoice with an indescribable and glorious joy, for you're receiving the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. There are some words that we're going to be using constantly through this retreat, and I think it's important at the beginning to attempt to define the meaning of these terms. The first is soul. We just read from Peter, the salvation of your souls. What do we mean when we use the word soul? I suggest that it speaks of my whole self, but with a special focus on my longing for love communion. I read you some text from the Psalms. It's important because sometimes we're brought up to think of body and soul as two separate things in a way. They're not. Soul is me, you, the whole of me. But the whole of me as longing for love communion. Psalm 42, as the deer longs for flowing streams, so my soul longs for you, O God. The Hebrew word behind the translation soul speaks of a vital energy, of a life force. As the deer longs for running streams, so my soul longs for you, O God. So I long for you with all my vital energy and my life force. Psalm 63. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. Psalm 143. I stretch out my hands to you. My soul thirsts for you like a parched land. And Psalm 84, verse 2. My soul longs. Indeed, it faints for the courts of the Lord. My body and my heart sing for joy to the living God. So in that psalm, we find three words, soul, body, and heart. Each of them speaks of the whole self, but from different aspects. Body. My body sings for joy. The word body speaks of my whole self with special focus on my belonging to and relating to the environment in which I live, including other people. The word body includes the aspect of fragility, vulnerability. And along with the rest of creation, we, my body, the whole of me, are drawn towards union with God. I'll read Psalm 63, verse 1. O God, you are my God. I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My body faints for you. The Hebrew word behind the translation body is flesh. My weakness, my vulnerableness, that part of me that corrupts eventually and dies. my body faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there's no water. Heart, as the psalmist said, my heart sings for joy. The word heart, too, speaks of my whole self, with special focus on my connecting with myself and with others in the mysterious depths of my being and experiencing communion there in my center, my heart. I'll read from some Psalms. I give thanks to you, my God, with all my heart. Again, I'm needy. My heart is pierced within me. I treasure your word in my heart, in all of me, but the central part of me, the core of me, my deepest self, my heart. Search me, O God, know my heart. So that's a brief attempt to define soul, body, heart. There's a fourth word that's of utmost importance, and it's the word spirit. Psalm 31 verse 5 reads, into your hands, O God, I commend my spirit. What do we mean by spirit? The word spirit speaks not of myself, but of my experiencing the gift of God's Holy Spirit. That is, the love communion of Jesus with God, his Father, and the love communion of God with his Son, Jesus. Spirit is my yielding to the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. The word actually is the same as the word breath. So we have to breathe in, and we're breathing in the Holy Spirit, but we can't hold our breath. We don't own our breath. We need to breathe out. Breathing out to God, breathing in from the Spirit, and breathing out our spirit to God. So the word spirit speaks not of myself, something that I am, but of my experiencing the gift of God's Holy Spirit and my yielding to the inspiration of this Holy Spirit. It speaks of my returning God's gift and trusting myself to God. The Genesis account speaks of God breathing life into Adam. Breathing, breath, spirit. We breathe this breath back to God in trust. Especially significant is the choice we make to believe that the Holy Spirit is present to us, that God is loving Jesus, and Jesus is loving God in our heart. Our communion is in proportion to the longing of our body and soul, and to the yielding of our spirit to God. Psalm 31, into your hand I commit my spirit, my breath, my life. Psalm 51, do not cast me away from your presence. Do not take your Holy Spirit from me. I need this constant breathing into me of God's breath. Psalm 77, I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. Psalm 104. All your creatures look to you to give them their food in due season. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are filled with good things. When you hide your face, they are dismayed. When you take away their breath, they die and return to the dust. When you send forth your Holy Spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the ground. In Psalm 143, let your good spirit lead me on a level path. So to come back to our reflections on prayer, in which all of these words, body, soul, heart, spirit, Jesus, as we said, wanted to get a fire blazing in people's hearts. We find that in Luke 12, verse 49. A fire that would burn away whatever is an obstacle to love. One person who picked up the message and the fire was Paul of Tarsus, and he expressed the aim of life in the most daring of terms. We're called, he said, and graced to be filled with the utter fullness of God. That's Ephesians 3:19. What extraordinary words. We're called and graced to be filled with the utter fullness of God. Indeed, as he wrote to the Corinthians, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has the heart imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. And he's not just referring to heaven. He's talking about here and now, as we are transformed from one degree of glory to another. That's 2 Corinthians 3:18. If we're tempted to think that this sounds too good to be true, we have 2,000 years of saintly people to assure us that the joy of living in intimate communion with God is possible. And we have their lives of generous love to show that their communion with God was real. In this retreat, we'll be listening to one such saint, the Carmelite sister, Teresa of Jesus. Jesus promised that he would draw everyone to himself. We find those words in John chapter 12. He wanted to share with us his love communion with God. There will be obstacles hindering the fire from taking hold. We should expect to find the road hard at times and the gate narrow. But Jesus assures us from his own experience that it does lead to life. If we want to live a full life, we must dare this journey. Jesus assures us that God's love for us is never wanting. And Teresa describes the steps we must take to respond to God's invitation to enjoy the communion for which we're made, the communion for which we long. Prayer is the name we give to our experience of communion in God's love. Prayer is the subject of this retreat. We each have our own unique path to walk. We have the Church's assurance that the signposts given us by Teresa point us in the right direction. while each person needs to follow their own path according to temperament and experience. Teresa certainly shows us her path. If she's going to help us, it would be good to know something of her story. Teresa was born in 1515 near the town of Avila in central Spain. To place her life, she's born in 1515. When she was 2 years old, Luther nailed his theses to the door of the church. So we're at the beginning of the Reformation. In 1534, when she was 20, the Jesuits were founded by Ignatius of Loyola. And in 1542, when she was 27, John of the Cross was born. Teresa's mother died in 1528 when she was 13. Aged 20, she entered the local Carmelite convent and made her first profession in 1537, taking the name Teresa of Jesus. The following year, she suffered a severe paralysis that lasted for 4 years and left her with a weakened heart and poor health for the rest of her life. Her father died in 1543. Life in the Avila convent was mediocre, and Teresa's life was initially no different. She was faithful to the times for prayer laid down in the rule. In 1554, in her 40th year, she had a mystical experience that convinced her that Jesus was present to her and loved her. And she had similar experiences over the following years. In her autobiography, she wrote that an experience of the presence of God, quote, would come upon me unexpectedly, so that I could in no way doubt that God was with me, or that I was totally immersed in God. She wanted to live a more fervent life than was possible in the Avila convent, and she obtained permission in 1562, when she was 47, to gather a small group of sisters and opened the convent of St. Joseph, where they lived according to the ancient Carmelite rule. There she experienced, dwelling in the depths of her soul, the presence of the Trinity. The presence in the depth of her being of God, of Jesus, and of the love spirit that flowed between them. It was while she was there in the convent of St. Joseph that, in obedience to her superiors, she wrote her life and the Way of Perfection. Impressed by her life, the superior general of the Carmelites authorized her to work for the reform of the order. She met John of the Cross and persuaded him to help her in reforming the male branch of the Carmelites. She established 14 convents for Carmelite nuns between 1567 and her death in 1582. And she gives an account of these foundations in a book called Foundations. In 1577, aged 62, she wrote her masterpiece, The Interior Castle. in which she sets out the path that she herself followed, which led her, and she trusted would lead others, into the experience of perfect communion with God. If that was all we knew about her, we might think that what she describes may well be suited for those for whom she wrote, 16th century Spanish sisters, but hardly for us, whose lives are so different. This is not what the church thinks, and hopefully we won't think it either when we hear what she has to say. It's not without relevance to add that she was said to be evidently, physically, quite beautiful, and people found her irresistibly attractive. She was affectionate, intelligent, shrewd, and very practical. In life, she called things as they are. Why would her description of prayer be any different? She suffered physically all her life, but never let it get in the way of what needed to be done. If some of her descriptions of her prayer life, her communion with God, seem extraordinary, and they do, her life offers ample evidence of the genuineness of her experiences. She knew that her experiences were of God, as she felt herself yielding to the gravity of a love that drew her into communion. She couldn't doubt that the one drawing her was God, who loved her. Of course, she had to be open to the attraction, and she had to let go anything that was an obstacle. Often this was painful, but the communion itself was never painful. It was everything her heart desired. And she knew that if this is true of her, it must be true of everyone. Hence her writing and her encouragement to us to dare this journey. For the goal is what we exist for. She knew that we would find this out for ourselves, each in our own way. She experienced her prayer as something she was receiving from God who is love. The experience of prayer is an experience of mutual indwelling. God is abiding in us and drawing us to abide in God, to make our home in this receiving and giving of love. We are to yield to this drawing. We're to remain quiet and consenting. One facet of the rich reality of communion is peace. Another is a new kind of loving of God. Another is our need to accept to be drawn beyond our accustomed knowing. And yet another is a loving awareness of presence. Prayer for Teresa is essentially something very simple. She speaks of it as an exercise of loving. And she calls it an intimate sharing between friends, taking time frequently to be alone with God who we know loves us. She calls it the soul is a paradise where the Lord finds his delight. and again. In its centre, very secret exchanges between God and the soul take place. It's foolish, she writes, to think that we'll enter heaven without entering into ourselves, without coming to know ourselves. In The Way of Perfection, written while she was in the convent of St. Joseph, she writes, "It's for you to look at him, at Jesus. He never takes his eyes off you." How beautiful is that? It's for you to look at him. He never takes his eyes off you. Again, statements from her interior castle. She says we must set our eyes on Christ. We must look on him and reflect. Care only, she says, about moving quickly so as to see the Lord. Prayer is essentially a personal response to God's mysterious presence. We each have to find our own unique way of responding to God's loving invitation to communion. We each have to find our own way of communing with God in prayer. At the same time, there are some general principles that can guide us in our response, and we can learn much from the teaching of those like Teresa who have journeyed in prayer and who have given expression to what they've learned along the way. John of the Cross writes, "The language which God hears best is silent love." Thérèse of Lisieux writes, "Prayer is a surge of the heart, a simple look turned towards heaven, a cry of recognition and love, embracing both trial and joy." Ruth Burrows, a current English Carmelite sister, writes, in Before the Living God, she writes, "True prayer is a giving of self to God, an opening of the self to God." And in another of her many books, Living in Mystery, she writes, "Prayer is our saying yes to God, who is bending to us, offering us love, inviting us to intimate friendship." Anthony Bloom writes in his Courage to Pray, "Prayer is the search for God, the encounter with God, the going beyond this encounter in communion. It arises from the awareness that the world in which we live is not simply two-dimensional, imprisoned in the categories of time and space, a flat world in which we meet only the surface of things, an opaque surface covering emptiness. Prayer is born of the discovery that the world has depths, that we're not only surrounded by visible things, but that we are also immersed in and penetrated by invisible things. And that this invisible world is both the presence of God, the supreme, sublime reality, and our own deepest truth. Living only in the visible world," he writes, "is living on the surface. It ignores or sets aside not only the existence of God, but the depths of created being. It's condemning ourselves to perceiving only the world's surface. But the human heart is deep. When we have reached the fountainhead of a human being's life, we discover that this itself springs from beyond. The human heart is open to the invisible. Not the invisible of depth psychology, but the invisible infinite. God's creative word. God's self. Returning to ourselves is thus not a synonym for introversion, but for emerging beyond the limits of our limited selves. St. John Chrysostom said, "When you discover the door of your heart, you discover the gate of heaven." And Anthony Bloom continues, "This discovery of our own depths goes together with the recognition of the depths in others. Each has his or her own immensity." I use the word immensity, he writes, on purpose. It means that the depth cannot be measured, not because it's too great for our measurements to reach it, but because its quality is not subject to measurement at all. The immensity of our vocation is to share the divine nature, and in discovering our own depths, we discover God. Meditation is important, for we want to know all we can about Jesus and about God, especially from the inspired word of the New Testament. When, in the course of our meditating, we find ourselves drawn into communion, we should learn to remain in God's presence with loving attention and a tranquil intellect. Even though this might seem like being idle, soon we will find, little by little, that in the words of John of the Cross, a divine calm and peace with a wondrous sublime knowledge of God enveloped in divine love will be infused into your soul. We are God's temple. God dwells in our hearts. The book of Revelation likens this temple to a very rare jewel, clear as crystal. God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. That's from the book of Revelation, chapter 21. The radiance of God reaches each of us wherever we are and draws us to the heart where we will live in God's embrace. Teresa likens the journey into this embrace to penetrating ever closer to the center, as though through the various dwelling places that constitute the interior castle. A castle that is a very rare jewel, clear as crystal. In John chapter 14, in the Last Supper discourse, Jesus says, "Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. I am in the Father, and the Father is in me." writes to the Colossians, Jesus, God's beloved Son, is the image of the invisible God. God was pleased for all the fullness to dwell in him. According to the author of the letter to the Hebrews, Jesus is the brilliance of God's glory, the exact imprint of God's very being. And so in our prayer, if we want to see God, we look at Jesus, who is the human embodiment of the wonder and mystery of the creating God, the love God. At the Last Supper, Jesus promised his disciples, I'll ask the Father, and he'll give you the Spirit to be with you forever. So that's our prayer, that the creating breath of God will be totally open to welcome and receive it. Jesus goes on, I am coming to you. And then, my Father will love you. We will come to you. We will make our home with you. This is the indwelling Trinity, going into our own mysterious depths, we discover the presence and action of Jesus, of God, his Father and our Father, and of the Spirit of love that Jesus breathes to the Father and the Father breathes to Jesus. Teresa assures us that God dwells in our heart, as does the risen Jesus. We know this because we experience the Holy Spirit, the love that flows between God and Jesus. We're constantly being drawn to the heart of the crystal palace. God is inviting each of us to journey into our heart, to journey the fullness, to enjoy the fullness of divine communion for which we're made and for which our body, our soul, our heart longs. This is Jesus' prayer for you and for me as we begin our retreat. As you, Father, are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the love with which you loved me may be in them, and I in them.